Kapal gave only this message. And even the wind also teaches us this. If you keep walking while doing the Simran, the destination comes to you by itself. This is the Bhajan Kapal Yahi Sandesha Data on page 203. The fort of deceit will be destroyed in this world because walls of sand do not last. There are so many sins with you, you are a great sinner. Hail the power of Almighty Kripal who carries all the burden. No one is an enemy. No one belongs to anyone else. Everyone is your very own. For as the Gurbani teaches, all this world was created from one light. O Guru Kripal, the negative power trembles, and death also is nervous in front of whoever has caught hold of your finger. Ajayb says, apologize to Kripal if your soul wants happiness. Kripal gave only this message, and even the wind also teaches us this. If you keep walking while doing the Simran, the destination comes to you by itself. Bhajan of Sanchi on page 203.
Simran karte chale chalo to manzil kud mil jati hai kirpal yahi sandesha deta hawa yahi sikhlati hai simran karte chale chalo to manjil kud mil jati hai chala fare bake kile ek din duniya mein de jate hai chala fare bake kile ek din duniya mein de jate hai Reto ki divar der tak kabhi nahi tik pati hai Reto ki divar der tak kabhi nahi tik pati hai Simran karte chale chalo to manjil kud mil jati hai kirpal yahi sandesha deta hawa yahi sikhlati hai simran karte chale chalo to manjil kud mil jati hai Itne sare paap saath mein, itne sare paapi hai. Itne sare paap saath mein, itne sare paapi hai. Kirpal takta teri je ho, sab kapara utati hai kirpal takta teri je ho sab kapara utati hai simran karte chale chalo to manjil kud mil jati hai Kirpal yahi sandesha deta hawa yahi sikhlati hai Simran nakarate chale chaloto Majila kudamila jati he Nako iberi nahi begana Jo bihe saba apana he Nako iberi nahi begana Jo bihe saba apana he Ekanur se sab jaga upajo guru bani batlati hai Ekanur se sab jaga upajo guru bani batlati hai Simran karte chale chaloto Manjila kuda mila jati he Kirpal yahi sandesha deta Hava yahi sikalati he Simran karte chale chaloto Manjila kuda mila jati he Guru Kirpala tu mari ungali tamra ki hai jisne bhi Guru Kirpala tu mari ungali tamra ki hai jisne bhi Usake aga kar kapata Oramot gabarati he Ajaib kirpala to mangala mafi Ajaib kirpala to mangala mafi Jejindari sukachati he Simrana karate chale chaloto Manjila kuda mila jati he Kirpal yahi sandesha deta Hava yahi sikalati he Simran karate chale chaloto Manjila kuda mila jati he
There are so many sins with you. You are a great sinner. Hail the power of Almighty Kripal, who carries all the burden. No one is an enemy. No one belongs to anyone else. Everyone is your very own. For as the Gurbani teaches, all this world was created from one light. Kripal gave only this message, and even the wind also teaches us this. If you keep walking while doing the Simran, the destination comes to you by itself. This has been a very traumatic week, obviously, and I wanted to read a letter from Kripal, which I'm sure some of you will have heard it so often, you may even know it by heart, for all I know. I've given so many talks over the years, and I have no memory of what I said when or where, so forgive me if I repeat myself. This is a letter Master wrote me when I was actually just, it was the first letter I wrote to him after I came back on the path in September 1961. As well, let me read, there's an editorial note that I put with it. This beautiful letter has been a constant source of encouragement and consolation since I received it 13 years ago this month. Actually, the note was written right after, it was published in the October 1974 Satsandesh, right after Master had left. That's the 13 years that are referred to there. I found this letter extremely helpful to read after he had gone. well, I won't say it made it bearable, because it really wasn't bearable, but it was very hopeful. I had written Master in a mood of deep despair over having wasted 2 years of my life away from him and over the fear of nuclear war, which seemed imminent. Some readers will recall the year of the fallout shelter, when we were being encouraged to accept the inevitability of wholesale catastrophe, and solid citizens were debating the ethics of shooting their neighbors if they dared to encroach on their shelters. The absurdity of the world and the whole worldly outlook on which I had staked my identity came home to me in an awful rush, and the Master pulled me back to him in the space of one afternoon. But confusion, resentment, and despair remained. How could God let things like nuclear wars become so probable? How could he create such a world? Out of such a mood was forged the first honest letter I ever wrote to Master. This was his reply. And I think, you know, when things are happening that are affecting us enormously and we have no control over them whatsoever, the things that Master says in here, I find extremely helpful. So Master wrote me, and this was his first letter to me in quite a while. I am glad to find that you have achieved a stable existence in a small rural town and have learnt the trade of a printer to carry on a smooth life. A settled and peaceful life is a helping factor for the spiritual undertakings. My best wishes are with you all. I am sorry that you had for some long time past neglected your meditations and grown careless in diet and generally lost interest in spiritual things. I am glad that you are again meditating and have taken a turn for your spiritual side. This will stand in your good stead. You should not take things only from physical angle. While one has to perform physical duties, the duties towards one's own self and God are not less important. Is not body more than raiment and life more than the meat? What does it profit a man if he gains the possessions of the whole world and loses one's own soul? The physical life, together with all its possessions and allurements, is subject to decay and disintegration. The precious moments of earth life spent in the holy meditations are superbly best utilized in our step in the right direction towards one's eventual return to one's true eternal home. Whether by ups and downs of the world or inner yearnings, one is fortunate to tread on this path of deliverance. You have got the sacred books and at present are reading Nam or Word. What you read in these books is to become a part of your life, and this you will achieve step by step if you are regular and devoted in meditations and develop within from day to day. Man is the noblest of all creation, and the highest ideal in this body is to meet the Lord, and for that purpose he has to know himself first. Self-knowledge precedes God-knowledge. Man has made wonderful progress physically and intellectually, but his spiritual side has been ignored. He is gaining control over the forces of nature in the shape of hydrogen bombs, etc., which are threatening the destruction of all mankind. Had he gained self-knowledge before having this control of forces of nature, these very things would have gone to the service of mankind. These weapons are being used for gaining supremacy over the others. Even the darkest clouds have a silver lining somewhere. To err is human. By suffering, one learns a lesson and tries to avoid sin and looks for virtuous life. This threat of destruction will go a long way to change the trend of humanity for the better, to live and let others live too. Providence has his own miraculous ways for guiding the destiny of child humanity. But the fact remains that a living master is a great blessing, and all those coming under his protective care and guidance will pass off unscathed by following his commandments, namely, love God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and love thy neighbor as thyself. If we give more value to a thing than is intrinsically due it, the fear of its loss will be considerably out of proportion to the actual facts. You need not worry about anything. Being under the protective care of the great master power, you are really a blessed soul, having always at your disposal the facility of drawing on that great power. The way how to do it is already with you. If you will just walk one step, he will come down a million of steps to pull you, help you, and guide you at every stage. You have simply to tune your receptivity to the fountainhead. The way to do it is to faithfully obey him and devotedly carry on as enjoined. All action has corresponding reaction. An individual action has an individual reaction. Collectively, people are asked to do ethical actions. This brings up good collective reaction. Reverse of it produces collective bad reaction. Nature has its own way of correcting and fulfilling reactions of individual good and bad action. Likewise, collective reactions are to be fulfilled. One may not be able to truly understand the depth of these things, for his perception and understanding is limited to gauge these depths. Internal ascension into higher regions opens our vision to see things clearly. We should therefore strive fully, honestly, faithfully, and diligently to proceed within. Those who are earnest and devoted are crowned with success. Many things become clear which otherwise, with all the reasoning and intelligence, will be at best hazy and foggy. But to those who are regularly devoted to meditation in the accurate way, their inner development takes them face to face to the radiant form of the Master within, in which God power appears, who talks to them as we talk outside, guides them in all matters. When the time comes for their leaving the physical body, he tells them that they have to go. There is nothing strange in it. It is every day happening. The spiritual aspirants inculcate a sense of aversion for the sensuous pleasures, as they have tasted the elixir of Nam within with the grace of the Master. All beauty and glory lies within. And if you will please be lovingly devoted to your holy meditations in an accurate way, as discussed in a copy of Brief Instructions, which I enclose for your guidance, you will find that you will be benefited immensely with his grace. So please be lovingly devoted with deep faith and sacred earnestness. Master Power working overhead will be extending all feasible help, grace, and protection. And also, another letter that he wrote me is also, I find, very helpful these days. Of course, it isn't just, you know, I mean, there's problems everywhere in the outside world. It isn't just the fires here, although God knows those are problematic enough for any number of years. But we're probably closer to World War III than we have been since 1945, the way things are going. So it's, you know, very important to remember what the Master has said in that letter and also in this one, which he wrote to me at the height of the snowmobile affair. This is a famous letter. It contains things that have been repeated many times. But this letter actually revolutionized my thought pattern. And it was a very major event for me to get it in my life. Worry and hurry are the chief causes to dwell on by the mind. If you could just eliminate these two by resigning to the divine will and pleasure of the gracious Master Power working overhead, you will be relieved of undue strain and stress. Please note it for certain that whatever comes to your account is in your best spiritual interests. And becoming a fit receptacle for the divine grace, you have to inculcate a sense of self-abnegation and effacement without involving your mind. The more you are relaxed, reposing, and receptive, more of ineffable bliss and harmony will fall to your lot. Just rise so high in the loving lap of the Master Power to consider yourself as a child who would relish thy will, not mine, be done. And I will, that last sentence, please note it for certain that whatever comes to your account is in your best spiritual interests. Is something that is very hard to believe when what is coming to our account is exactly what we think is the worst possible thing that we can imagine, which is what I thought at the time I got the letter. I would have argued with anybody that it was not in my best spiritual interest, not at all. It was horrible. It was awful. I hated it. And I was totally obsessed by it. But I couldn't argue with the Master. I shouldn't say that, because I did argue with him, both Kripal and Sanchi, on a number of occasions, but I was very silly to do that. Anyway, I didn't argue with him on this occasion, and I did take it for what it was, very important. Please note it for certain that whatever comes to your account is in your best spiritual interests. Because when the Master initiates us, or even actually it starts before that, whenever the desire to meet God arises in someone's heart, then the process begins. From then on, everything that happens to that person has relevance in connection with the desire to meet God. And it's like everything that comes to us is an opportunity. Now, we can flub it. I mean, God knows I've flubbed many of them. That's why the title of the book is what it is. We can certainly flub it, and we can fall flat on our face. But the fact remains that it is an opportunity. And if we can grasp that, follow the instructions of Master in that letter, then we can go a long way toward peace and harmony within ourselves, and recognize that the Master is in charge of our life, and he does not give us a stone when we ask for bread. He doesn't do that. And quite a different note, this is the it's Santpani Ashram this weekend. They're having a retreat in commemoration of the day that the ashram was founded, which was October 11th, 1963. We're a long way from Santpani Ashram physically, but my heart is always there, at least to some extent. And I wanted to read the section from the book about Master's coming to the ashram and what happened on that occasion. It's called An Ashram is Born. It says, the following day, I had gone to Boston in the morning of the day previous and been at the initiation that he did there, at which he opened my inner eye for the first time in 2 years, and I actually saw light and was overjoyed. The following day, he came to Sant Bani Farm, and our new life in him began. Later, it seemed that the great gulf fixed between the old and the new opened on this day. One 24-hour period, and what changes it wrought. All of the hard work and the nightmare anxiety of the previous 5 weeks faded away in the unearthly joy those 24 hours brought. After it was over, I reflected that it was the one event in my life that had not only been as good as I could have imagined, but infinitely better. I understood for the first time what it is like to be loved, really loved, by someone who knew what I really was. I had a taste, that is, of the love of God. I had gone with our 3.5-year-old daughter, Miriam, to the nearest exit off Interstate 93 to meet him in the caravan, 5 or 6 cars that was accompanying him. When he arrived at Sant Bani, I jumped out of my car and rushed over to his. Judith, with our 2-year-old son Eric in her arms, was already greeting him. He spoke to us very kindly and slowly climbed the little hill on which the house stood. When he reached the front door, he turned and looked slowly and thoughtfully over the beautiful New Hampshire landscape spread out before him. He laughed and said very quietly, almost under his breath, "Nature is always beautiful, except when tormented by man." Then he went in the house. A little later, Judith and I were looking out the back window when we saw him walking up the little hill behind the house to a large and prominent rock under a cherry tree. He was accompanied only by Bibi Hardevi, called Taiji, his housekeeper who looked after his needs. When he reached the rock, he took off his turban and lay down on the grass, Taiji squatting nearby. Judith and I watched wide-eyed. We nudged each other in suppressed excitement. What happened then was surely the most lighthearted satsang ever. As the disciples discovered where he was, they gathered around him. There were about 15 or 20 people. While he sat on the rock, put them in meditation, tossed them prasad apples, joked and teased with them, took pictures of them because they had been taking pictures of him, and in general made them very happy. But not me. I and 3 others were at the Unitarian Church in nearby Franklin, where the master was scheduled to speak that night, getting the auditorium ready for his talk. We missed the whole thing. That night the master gave his talk, and I'm going to include the beginning and the ending, along with the questions that were asked that night and the answers Master gave. He said, "Dear brothers and sisters, I am a man like you. Of course I had the good fortune to sit at the feet of my master Baba Sawan Singh of Bayas, through whose grace I solved the mystery of life. Religions were made by man for his moral and spiritual uplift. These were made for man, and man was not made for them. The purpose of joining a religion is to know God, which is the highest ideal before us. And the human body is the golden opportunity we have got in which we can know him. So all of us who are sitting here, we are fortunate that we have got the human body. And we have also joined various religions to achieve that object of life which we have got before us. We have to see now how far we have succeeded in achieving the object of life which is before us. So I am here not to advocate any new religion to you. Remain where you are, but be true Christians. What did Christ say? Open the inner eye to see the light of God within you. He who sees the light of God is a true Christian. And if you have not seen the light of God, then we've joined that school, of course, but we have not become true Christians. Similarly, a Sikh is one who sees the light of God. Remain in the outer forms. That's the first step. To belong, to believe in some religion is a blessing. But you must rise above. If we did not live in any religion, there would be corruption, or we would have to invent new religions. Why don't you stay in the religions which have stood the test of time? If there is any corruption, you see, just leave it aside and follow the true teachings which the masters gave from time to time. So as I told you, I have not come to advocate new religions. Remain where you are. This is the truth that has been given by all masters. Just try to meet somebody who knows the way. We want a teacher in any line, you see. Whatever subject you have to take, naturally, sit at his feet. He is your true friend, your true brother. He is competent to give you some experience. And all credit goes to him. No son of man can do it, but the God in him, which is manifest, he is competent to raise you up and give you an experience of his own self, you see. With these few words, I'm glad I've been here at Satbani Ashram for a day. They wanted me to speak something, what little I know. To the best I can, I have given you a digest of the same in a few words. These words are for your calm consideration. If you've got true hunger, thirst for God, it is God above who has to make the arrangements. He will bring you in contact somewhere where you can be put on the way. So whenever masters come, they see people from the level of the human body or from the level of the embodied soul, not from the level of the outer badges of different religions that we are carrying. That is why his first work is to collect all children of God together, not to blend their religions into one, to let them simply remain where they are, but to rise above body consciousness to come to the truth, you see. And he has the competency to raise you up and give you the experience within to start with. So thank you for your patient hearing. And then actually Penny Golden asked, did the Master say that one day we would reach perfection? And Master said, yes, there is hope. In the human body, you see, I would say we have got the birthright to be perfect, to know God. Christ said, be ye perfect as your Father is in heaven. If there were no hope, I don't think he would have given that statement. We are spirit in man, and spirit is perfect. We are simply environed by mind and matter and other things. When we shake off, we are perfect, you see. And human body is the only time, the golden opportunity which we have got to go back home. And there was another question. Do you declare that when we drop this body that we take on another one? And Master said, there is life after death. That's definite, that's sure. I have come from India. I am no more in India, but here in America. There is a transfer from the physical to the astral. I told you from the beginning that macrocosm is in the microcosm of the human body. God has given us bodies to work through the three planes. In the physical plane, we have the physical body. When we shake it off at the time of death, or even if now we are able to shake it off, of course with the guidance of somebody you know who can take us into the beyond, if we shake off all these three bodies, we see we are souls. God is within us and we are in God. And Penny asked again, I still don't understand from how you answered my question about perfection. And Master said, as I told you, I think if you had understood properly, the man who has got the human body, he has the birthright to be perfect, to know God, you see. The time factor is a necessity. If he is left alone, it may happen in due course. But I will give you the example of a fruit tree. If you leave it alone to nature, it will bear fruit in 6 or 7 years. If you give it some scientific food, it will give fruit in 2 or 3 years. If trees can take some help from outside and give fruit quickly, why can't the conscious man have help from the higher conscious man to bear forth fruit quicker? So there's hope. And then someone asked, the same person who asked about putting on another body, do I understand you that after death there'll be a rebirth on earth again? And the master says, well, you see, my point is some masters have referred to it and some have not. And the questioner said, reincarnation? And the master said, I tell you, some masters have referred to it, reincarnation, and others have not referred to it. The same question was asked of me when I went to Pakistan. Muslims generally don't believe in reincarnation. These people came up to me, so many, and said, well, do you believe in reincarnation? I told them the very same words that I have now told you, that some have referred to reincarnation and others have not. Then I told them, before I reply to you further, I would like to ask one question from you. I have come to Pakistan. I am abiding by all the laws of this country. I am living very lovingly with all. Everybody lives lovingly with me. But with all that, you have got prison houses, a police department, and records. I say that there is no police or imprisonment for me. So the masters who have not referred to it say, become true Christians. When you live by God, you see, you love God the most. Where is reincarnation for you? That is only for those who are attached to the world, you see. That is why some masters have not referred to it. So I think that the human body is the highest in all creation. We have got the golden opportunity and we can live if we can find God within this human body. Where is the question of returning? And she has said, I still don't know if I understand you right or not. You do believe in reincarnation? And Master said, past masters have left their proofs for that, you see. Direct proofs, paper proofs, and even incidents they remember from their past births, and that has been checked too. But not for the souls who have attained God, you see. And then Bill Simpson asked, it seems that the big difference in this type of talk is the fact that the master is needed, you know, direct contact with the master. So my question is, who is considered a master? And Master said, yes. And Bill continued, in the United States particularly, I know in India, and Master said, whether in the United States or not, I think you know better, because you have been here all along. I have only come for a trip. Last time also I only came for a trip. But the point is what the masters say. Who is a master? Who can be called a master? One who sees and can make others see. You see? Who has the competency to raise our souls above the body consciousness, open the inner eye. And you testify that there is light. He who can give you that experience, who is competent to give you that, he may be called superior to you anyway. If we can rise above our own selves, well and good. A blind man needs 2 eyes to see. If not, in worldly things we do seek the help of others. Why not in this most important case? The general rule is man learns from man. The teacher of man is a man. Of course, the man at whose pole that God power is working alone has the power, not the Son of Man, as I told you before. It is the God in him manifested that has the competency to raise your soul above the senses and enables you to see the light and hear the voice of God. All right, you have to go alone. The best I know I have placed before you with the grace of my master. It is for your calm consideration to see how far you can derive benefit from that. And I comment, there are several noteworthy points about this meeting and this talk. For one thing, about 75 people attended, and the population of the area around Franklin was then about 7,500. So 1% of the total population came to see the Master. If 1% of the total population of New York City, where the Master had been a few days previously, had come to see him, there would have been 70,000 people in the hall. And several people who attended that night, including two of the people who asked questions, Penny Golden, who asked the two questions about perfection, and Bill Simpson, who asked the question about where a master might be in the United States, later took the initiation and practiced Shabda Yoga. If you read the questions and answers carefully, you will note that Master is not at all clear about whether he teaches reincarnation or not, much to the frustration of one lady who kept trying to get a straight answer. Of course, he did teach it, but there is a story behind the obfuscation. Among the attendees was a man named Gerald Boyce. He was a native of Franklin, had worked at the G.W. Griffin Company hacksaw factory much of his adult life as a troubleshooter. He had spent time with the great teacher Krishnamurti in Ojai, California, had been a vegetarian since the age of 25, when a farmer's wife he was working for had asked him to kill a chicken and he found he couldn't do it, had grown his hair and beard long at a time when no one, and I mean no one, did such a thing, and had two things in his mind about Kripal by way of tests. Did he wear leather? Did he teach reincarnation? He had studied the occult scripture Oaspi for many years, and while that book advocates vegetarianism, it denies reincarnation. And to him, wearing leather was consistent with vegetarianism. When the Master came in the hall that night, he was in his stocking feet. He had left his shoes outside. This was not at all his usual practice, and I noticed it at the time. Then, of course, Gerald heard the talk and loved it. As he told me later, I saw it had an inner logic to it. When the question about reincarnation came up, what he got from it was that the Master didn't teach it. By the time he found out the truth of it, he didn't care anymore. He was totally convinced of Kripal's greatness and was initiated a year later. And, of course, the noteworthiest thing of all, the Master's reference to Sant Bani Ashram. Prior to this, our farm had never been referred to that way. After this, it was never referred to any other way. Judith had ridden to the church that night in the car with the Master. On the way in, he said to her, "Your husband missed everything this afternoon." She explained that I was preparing the hall for the talk that night, and he nodded. The following morning, the Master held a group meditation at our now ashram. It was the first time I had meditated since the Master had given me back the light 2 days before. This time, the light was even more intense and more bright, and through it I caught glimpses of much more. When the Master came to me afterward, I told him what I had seen, and he twinkled. Later, I went up to him and said, "I just want to thank you for that beautiful meditation this morning. I know I couldn't have done it by myself." He looked at me and said matter-of-factly, "Well, you missed all the fun yesterday," and smiled into my eyes. Before the meditation started, I noticed that Gerald Boyce, of course I did not know his name then, had just walked in. The Master saw him and said to me, "Now it's time to start. People are arriving." I later found out that Gerald had walked the entire distance from Tilton, where he was living, to the ashram in Sanbrinton, by way of Franklin, where he had hoped to find a cab, but the cab company wasn't open yet, a distance of some 15 miles. When he arrived, it was time to start. Later that same morning, the master was standing behind the big house alone, and I went up to him. Last night, I heard you refer to this place as an ashram. Judith and I have talked it over, and we agreed that we would like to give it to you. He said with great emphasis, "You keep custody. Maintain it according to my teachings, that's all." We all left around noontime, after an orgy of picture-taking, for Kripal Ashram in Vermont, managed by Nina Jitana. On the way out, an incident occurred which none of us except the master were remotely aware of at the time, yet it is an excellent example of how the master works. We think we understand what he is doing. We include him in our mental catalog of categories we are familiar with. Yet the truth is we see only the barest sliver of what he is and what his activities include. The following is an article written by Charlene Girouard much later and published in the August 1993 issue of Sant Pani magazine. The year was 1963, the month October. I was 12 years old, living with my family in Massachusetts. My oldest sister was going to a Catholic boarding school in Hudson, New Hampshire, about an hour's drive from Franklin. One Sunday, our whole family drove over to visit her. Actually, it was a Saturday, but her memory was a little off on that. After leaving the rest of the family at the boarding school, my dad decided to go for a drive in the country, so I went along with him. Dad loved to ride up and down the winding dirt roads, which were quite common in that part of the country, to see what was at the end. On this particular day, we had gone some distance down a road when my father slowed to a stop to let four or five cars coming down a steep dirt driveway drive past us. While we watched, a man in the back seat of the first car leaned forward with his hands folded and bowed slightly to my father while staring at him quite penetratingly and very seriously. He had a white beard and a white turban and deep-set eyes. I was in the back seat and had seen him, but he had not looked at me. I zoomed over to the other side of the car and with my face pressed against the glass window, just hoped for some reason, I didn't understand why, with all my heart that this man would look at me too. Just when it seemed the moment had been lost, he leaned forward and with folded hands looked at me. Very sadly, I thought in my 12-year-old mind, why is he so sad? But then I felt a sense of relief. He had looked at me. Somehow this was very important. Well, Dad and I decided to go up this driveway and investigate. Actually, it wasn't. It wouldn't have been the driveway. It would have been, well, maybe, I don't know. It was either the dirt road, Osgood Road, or it was what is now Ashram Road. A turban and a white beard in New Hampshire. At the top was a wood frame house. A sign read Sant Pani Farm. Being Catholic and my father being French, I thought maybe it was a farm for men studying to be priests and dedicated to the Catholic Saint Boniface in French. My father shrugged his shoulders and we drove back to the boarding school, picked up the rest of the family and drove home. Over the years, I forgot about the incident, although the picture of that man with the long white beard always intrigued me. I left home at an early age, but returned home for visits periodically over the course of the years. Meanwhile, my parents had relocated to Eastern Canada. A few years before my dad passed away, in 1986, he started mentioning this incident to me from time to time, but with some embarrassment. He was a strict Catholic. Around this time, he would occasionally complain to me of a ringing in his right ear. Since I had taken some nursing training and he was a dentist, we would try to figure out the cause. I don't know if he mentioned it to the other members of the family. Sometimes we would just be sitting together eating and this ringing would start in his ear. He found it quite annoying. I should mention that Saint Teresa, the famous Spanish Carmelite mystic, also heard exactly ringing in her right ear pretty constantly, and she also found it quite annoying. She complains about it in her books. A few months before my father passed away, which was quite suddenly at home of a heart attack, we were sitting at the table, and he asked me bashfully if I remembered that strange man in the white beard, referring to that fateful encounter in 1963. He told me that he was having dreams about him that seemed so real. We both wondered who he had been. As he was telling me about the dreams, I could tell he was disturbed, but somehow happy about them. Well, we just looked at each other and wondered what it was all about. After my father died, I dreamt about him 3 or 4 different times. In the last dream, he told me he was doing great and that he was on his way to New Jerusalem. It was a phrase he had never used while alive. I was not familiar with it until a couple of months before my initiation in 1989, when I found reference to it in Sant Kripal's book, Nam. In December 1988, 2 years after my father died, I was sleeping and was awakened by a touch on my forehead. This happened a couple more times and led to a number of inner experiences, but they were without figure or form. Meanwhile, a satsangi was working where I was employed, and I felt quite drawn to her, as she seemed to evoke that same warm, loving quality that was akin to my nighttime experiences. Well, one thing led to another. She lent me a book on Sant Mat. I asked her for another. I bought 2 more of my own. At first, I was not at all interested in Sanchi. By then, I had remembered vividly the incident with Master Kripal, 1963, and recognized his face from the pictures in the Sant Mat books I was reading. I realized that my father was safe. He was with Kripal. As I sat reading these books and looking at the pictures of Sanchi, I was drawn to those eyes, although if anyone had told me even a few months earlier that I was going to have a master, I would have laughed. But Sanchi had his way and has his ways. I fell in love with him. A few trips to the ashram in British Columbia, a few satsangs, and a few weeks of his eyes, and I wanted initiation, which came that summer. And as you can tell, this reading moves me very much. For some reason, you see, it brought home to me, the incidents with Gerald, which I learned about, during the following year, brought home to me that Master is doing things all the time that we have not the slightest understanding of. And I noticed he walked in his stocking feet that night, and I noticed that he gave the most roundabout possible answers to the question on reincarnation, without denying that he taught it. But it was so confusing to be there and listen to it. I thought, what is he doing? I thought at the time, and then when Gerald told me later about his reactions, and that he came to the conclusion that Master didn't teach it, which is, he had to absolutely come to that conclusion in order to stay with the Master for a while. And like I said in the book, by the time that he realized the truth of it, he didn't care anymore. The Master was so important to him that he realized, okay, if he teaches reincarnation, then reincarnation is the truth. But, the corollary of that is that the Master does not care whether we believe in reincarnation or not. You know, it's not a criterion for initiation. It's not a criterion for going within. It's not a criterion for anything. It's a useful, helping thing if we think in those terms. It's truth, and it therefore can help us understand things about the universe, but it is not necessary to believe it in order to do the path. It's not necessary to believe anything in order to do the path except the importance and value of going within, you know, and the recognition of the master who helps us do that. Otherwise, there's no doctrinal, you know, qualification. It's not a factor. Anyway, I realized then that Master was doing stuff when he was there that I had no idea what it was all about. But the letter from Charlene, I mean, my God, it came. I first read that 30 years later, in 1993. It was published in the Vancouver newsletter before it was picked up. Dick Shannon picked it up from there and published it in Sant Bonnie. And I couldn't believe that this was going on. We absolutely knew nothing about it. I mean, all of this, that took place in a split second, what he did with Charlene and her father. You know, while we were driving on our way to Vermont, I thought the whole trip, the whole program at Sant Bonnie was over. But just as with Gerald, the master knows who he has to come for. He knows his children and he picks them up and he gives them what they need. And that's the way of it. And we don't understand. We don't understand these things when they're happening. We don't have the slightest clue as to who the master is and what's he doing. So these are important things. It's been very helpful to me to recognize the fact that what we see and perceive, not just about the master, but about the universe, you know, what we see and perceive from our level, as Master wrote me in the letter I started out reading, we can't understand the inner truth of these things because we don't have the angle of vision that allows us to do that. That comes only from going within. Therefore, we must strive fully, consciously, and with all earnestness to go within. It's very humbling to come. Been very humbling for me to come to an understanding of this, that we don't know anything, really. We think we do. We think we make labels, we classify, we decide this and that. We pass moral judgments on other people. All of that we do, and we don't have the slightest clue what is going on beneath all that stuff. You know, why people really do what they do, we don't know. And as far as the master is concerned, you know, he is something else. The best thing we can hope for in regard to understanding him is to accept the fact that he loves us and that he will take care of us from the ultimate point of view, not necessarily for our convenience on the level of the physical plane, although sometimes he does that too. But it's know it for certain that whatever comes to our account is in our best spiritual interests, not necessarily our best physical interests. But from the point of view of what we are really after, finding God and going home, everything that happens is a possibility, an opportunity, a potential lesson that the Master gives us. And that is what we have to understand about him. If we understand that, then eventually we will understand everything else. But it begins with that.
ਹੁਣ ਆਪ ਪਿਆਰ ਨਾਲ ਸਮਝਾਉਂਦੇ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਜਦ ਸ਼੍ਰੀ ਰਾਮ ਚੰਦਰ ਜੀ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਨੂੰ 14 ਸਾਲ ਦਾ ਬਨਵਾਸ ਹੋਇਆ, ਆਪ ਉਸ ਦੌਰਾਨ ਪੰਪਾਸੁਰ ਦੇ ਉੱਪਰ ਗਏ, ਉੱਥੇ ਰਿਖੀ ਮੁਨੀ ਤਪ ਭਜਨ ਅਭਿਆਸ ਆਪਣਾ ਕਰ ਰਹੇ ਸੀਗੇ, ਕਿਉਂਕਿ ਜਿਹੜੇ ਲੋਕ ਕਰਮ ਕਾਂਡ ਕਰਦੇ ਹੈ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਲੋਕਾਂ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਹੰਕਾਰ ਆ ਜਾਂਦਾ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਅਸੀਂ ਇਤਨਾ ਤਪ ਕਰਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਜਾਂ ਇਤਨੇ ਅਸੀਂ ਅੱਛੇ ਅੱਛੇ ਕਰਮ ਕਾਂਡ ਕਰਦੇ ਹਾਂ, ਅਸੀਂ ਅੱਛੇ ਹੈ। ਹੁਣ ਜਿਹੜੀ ਸ਼ਿਵਰੀ ਸੀ, ਗਰੀਬ ਜਾਤੀ ਦੀ ਭੀਲਣੀ ਸੀ, ਉਹ ਰਾਮ ਚੰਦਰ ਦੇ ਪਿਆਰ ਵਿੱਚ ਮਸ ਸੀਗੀ। ਜਦੋਂ ਰਾਮ ਚੰਦਰ ਦਾ ਆਗਮਨ ਪੰਪਾਸੁਰ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਸੁਣਿਆ, ਸਭ ਰਿਖੀਆਂ ਮੁਨੀਆਂ ਨੇ ਆਪੋ ਆਪਣੀਆਂ ਕੁਟੀਆ ਸਵਾਰੀਆਂ, ਸਭ ਨੂੰ ਹੰਕਾਰ ਸੀ ਕਿ ਉਹ ਮੇਰੇ ਕੋਲ ਹੀ ਆਏਗਾ ਜਦ ਮੈਂ ਇਤਨੇ ਜਪ ਤਪ ਕਰਦਾ ਹਾਂ। ਤੋ ਭੀਲਣੀ ਦੇ ਬੈਠੀ ਬੈਠੀ ਦੇ ਦਿਮਾਗ ਚ ਇਹ ਆਇਆ, ਮਤਾ ਕਿਤੇ ਭਗਵਾਨ ਮੇਰੀ ਝੌਂਪੜੀ ਚ ਹੀ ਨਾ ਆ ਜਾਣ, ਮੈਂ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੂੰ ਕੀ ਦੇਵਾਂਗੀ ਖਾਣ ਨੂੰ। ਆਖਰ ਜੰਗਲ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਜਾਂਦੀ ਹੈ, ਉੱਥੋਂ ਬੇਰ ਚੁਗ ਲੈਂਦੀ ਹੈ। ਫਿਰ ਦਿਲ ਚ ਖਿਆਲ ਆਇਆ ਝੌਂਪੜੀ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਬੈਠੀ ਦੇ ਕਿਤੇ ਬੇਰ ਖੱਟੇ ਨਾ ਹੋਣ, ਭਗਵਾਨ ਦਾ ਮੂੰਹ ਜਿਹੜਾ ਹੈ ਉਹ ਖੱਟਾ ਹੋ ਜਾਏਗਾ। ਹੁਣ ਬੇਰ ਨੂੰ ਚੱਖਦੀ ਹੈ, ਲੇਕਿਨ ਜਿਹੜਾ ਮਿੱਠਾ ਹੈ ਉਹਨੂੰ ਇੱਕ ਪਾਸੇ ਰੱਖ ਦਿੰਦੀ ਹੈ, ਜਿਹੜਾ ਕੜਵਾ ਹੈ ਖੱਟਾ ਉਹਨੂੰ ਇੱਕ ਪਾਸੇ ਰੱਖ ਦਿੰਦੀ ਹੈ। ਦਿਲ ਚ ਇਹ ਭੁੱਲ ਜਾਂਦੀ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਚੱਖਣ ਨਾਲ ਬੇਰ ਜੂਠਾ ਹੋ ਜਾਏਗਾ। ਜਦ ਰਾਮ ਚੰਦਰ ਜੀ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਪੰਪਾਸੁਰ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਗਏ, ਕਿਸੇ ਵੀ ਰਿਖੀ ਮੁਨੀ ਦੀ ਝੌਂਪੜੀ ਚ ਕੁਟੀਆ ਚ ਨਹੀਂ ਗਏ, ਸਿੱਧੇ ਭੀਲਣੀ ਦੀ ਝੌਂਪੜੀ ਵਿੱਚ ਗਏ, ਉਹਦੇ ਜਾ ਕੇ ਜੂਠੇ ਬੇਰ ਖਾਧੇ। ਸਾਰੇ ਹੈਰਾਨ ਰਹਿ ਗਏ ਕਿ ਇੱਕ ਨੀਵੀਂ ਜਾਤੀ ਵਾਲੀ ਕੋਲ ਗਏ ਹੈ। ਆਖਰ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਪਾਣੀ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਬਹੁਤ ਸਾਰੇ ਕਿਰਮ ਪਏ ਹੋਏ ਸਨ। ਰਾਮ ਚੰਦਰ ਜੀ ਅੱਗੇ ਰਿਖੀਆਂ ਮੁਨੀਆਂ ਨੇ ਬੇਨਤੀ ਕੀਤੀ ਕਿ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਜੀ, ਅਸੀਂ ਪਾਣੀ ਦੀ ਬੜੀ ਸਫਾਈ ਕਰਦੇ ਹਾਂ, ਆਖਰ ਜੀ ਬੜੇ ਪੈਂਦੇ ਹੈ, ਕਿਉਂਕਿ ਭੀਲਣੀ ਨੂੰ ਉੱਥੋਂ ਉਹ ਪਾਣੀ ਨਹੀਂ ਲੈਣ ਦਿੰਦੇ ਸੀ, ਛੂਤ ਛਾਤ ਸਮਝਦੇ ਸੀਗੇ। ਤੋ ਉਹ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗੇ ਵੀ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਰਿਖੀ ਮੁਨੀ ਹੋ, ਇੰਨੇ ਜਪ ਤਪ ਕੀਤੇ ਹੈ, ਤੁਸੀਂ ਆਪਣੇ ਚਰਨ ਪਾਓਗਾ, ਸਾਧੂਆਂ ਦੇ ਤਾਂ ਚਰਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਸਭ ਕੁਛ ਠੀਕ ਹੋ ਜਾਂਦਾ ਹੈ। ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੇ ਸਭ ਦੇ ਚਰਨ ਪਾਏ, ਲੇਕਿਨ ਪਾਣੀ ਉਸੇ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਰਿਹਾ। ਫਿਰ ਉਹ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗੇ ਰਾਮ ਚੰਦਰ ਜੀ ਨੂੰ, ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਜੀ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਆਪਣੇ ਚਰਨ ਪਾਓ। ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੇ ਵੀ ਪਾਏ, ਉਸੇ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਦਾ ਉਹ ਪਾਣੀ ਰਿਹਾ। ਉਹ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗੇ ਵੀ ਹੁਣ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਇਉਂ ਕਰੋ, ਭੀਲਣੀ ਦੇ ਵੀ ਚਰਨ ਪਵਾ ਕੇ ਦੇਖੋ। ਰਾਮ ਚੰਦਰ ਨੇ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦਾ ਹੰਕਾਰ ਦੂਰ ਕਰਨਾ ਸੀਗਾ ਕਿ ਹੰਕਾਰੀਆਂ ਦੇ ਚਰਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਕੀ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ। ਇਸ ਵਾਸਤੇ ਗਰਜ ਐਸੀ ਚੀਜ਼ ਹੈ, ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੇ ਫੌਰਨ ਆਪਣੀ ਗਰਜ ਨੂੰ ਪੂਰੀ ਕਰਨ ਦੇ ਮਾਰਿਆਂ ਨੇ ਕਹਿਣ ਲੱਗੇ, ਹਾਂ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਭੀਲਣੀ ਦੇ ਵੀ ਪਵਾ ਲਓ ਚਰਨ। ਜਦ ਭੀਲਣੀ ਦੇ ਚਰਨ ਪਵਾਏ, ਪਾਣੀ ਜਿਹੜਾ ਸੀ ਸਾਫ਼ ਸਵੱਛ ਹੋ ਗਿਆ। ਇਸ ਵਾਸਤੇ ਪਲਟੂ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਆ, ਖਾਏ ਸ਼ਿਵਰੀ ਕੇ ਬੇਰ, ਮੂਏ ਸਭ ਰਿਖੀ ਮੁਨੀ ਰੋਏ। ਆਪ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਰਿਖੀ ਮੁਨੀ ਰੋਂਦੇ ਹੀ ਰਹਿ ਗਏ, ਉਹਨੇ ਜਾ ਕੇ ਪਿਆਰ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਮਸਤ ਬੈਠੀ ਭੀਲਣੀ ਦੇ ਜੂਠੇ ਬੇਰ ਹੀ ਭਗਵਾਨ ਰਾਮ ਨੇ ਖਾ ਲਏ।
ਵੈਨ ਸ਼੍ਰੀ ਰਾਮ ਚੰਦਰ ਜੀ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਔਰ ਲਾਰਡ ਰਾਮਾ ਵਾਸ ਇਨ ਐਕਸਾਈਲ ਫਾਰ 14 ਈਅਰਸ, ਵੈਨ ਹੀ ਵਾਸ ਵਾਂਡਰਿੰਗ ਫਰੋਮ ਪਲੇਸ ਟੂ ਪਲੇਸ ਇਨ ਦ ਫੋਰੈਸਟ, ਵਾਂਸ ਹੀ ਕੇਮ ਟੂ ਅ ਪਲੇਸ ਕਾਲਡ ਪੰਪਾਸੁਰ, ਵੈਰ ਦੇਰ ਯੂਜ਼ ਟੂ ਲਿਵ ਸੋ ਮੈਨੀ ਰਿਸ਼ੀਸ ਐਂਡ ਮੁਨੀਸ who were doing so many types of austerities and practices. And they all were proud of their austerities, all were proud of their practices. So that is why when they came to know that Lord Rama was coming over there, they all prepared to welcome him. In that place, there used to live an old woman who was of low caste, and she was also a devoted worshipper of Lord Rama. When rishis and munis were preparing to welcome Lord Rama, they all were proud of their austerities, and they all had expected that Lord Rama will come and bless their homes, will bless their cottages. So they had made their cottages, their homes very beautiful, and they were preparing themselves to welcome Lord Rama. At the same time, that old woman, who was not even allowed to take the water from the well of the rishis and munis because she was of the low caste, so she was also very happy to know that Lord Rama was coming. But she had never thought that Lord Rama will come to her home. But then she thought that maybe it is possible that he may come, because she was having the desire of serving Lord Rama. And then she thought that, well, if he comes to my home, I don't have anything to serve him with. Let me go in the forest and find out some fruits for him. So when she went in the forest, she found some berries, but then she was not sure that whether they are sweet or sour. And she was worried that if those fruits are sour, Lord will not like that. So she started tasting them, and she was so much intoxicated in the love for Lord Rama that she did not even realize that while she was tasting the berries, she was contaminating them. But anyway, she sorted out the sour ones from the sweet ones, and she had the sweet ones for Lord Rama in case he would come to his little hut. When Lord Rama came to that place called Pampasur, all the rishis and munis welcomed him. But he did not go to anybody's cottage because they were full of egoism. They all were proud of their practices and austerities. That is why Lord Rama did not go to their homes. Instead, he went to the home of that poor old woman, whose name was Shivri, and he was very pleased to eat those contaminated fruits. Everybody objected that, but Lord Rama was not bothered because he was appreciating and he was impressed by the love and devotion of that poor old woman. Now, all those rishis and munis were having one problem over there. They had a pond of water which was full of all the mosquitoes and the other insects, and the water was very dirty. So they all requested Lord Rama to purify that water. Lord Rama replied that, well, all of you are great rishis and munis. You do so many austerities, you do so much practices. And it is said that the feet of sadhus are very pure. Wherever they put their feet, that place becomes pure. So why don't you put your feet in that pond and the water will become pure? Why don't you do that? All the rishis and munis tried that, but it did not work. The water was still very dirty. Then Lord Rama said that, you have tried everybody's feet. Why don't you invite that old woman whom you do not even let to take the water from your well? Please invite her and tell her to put her feet in the pond and then see what happens. Now you know that when we need something, we are ready to sacrifice anything for it. Even though they did not like that poor old woman, but because Lord Rama had said that, they accepted that and they called old woman to put her feet in the water. And to everybody's surprise, that water became very pure and clean when that old woman put her feet in the water. Lord Rama did that miracle only to remove the egoism of those rishis and munis. So here Pultusab says that when Lord Rama went there, he did not go to any rishi muni's place. He went to the old woman, and all the rishis and munis objected that. They were not pleased and they all started weeping because Lord Rama had gone to the place of that old woman and ate the contaminated fruits.
The closing bhajan is on page 267. O beloved Kripal Guru, my love with you is very ancient. Tumase, Mary Prita Purani. I am lying at your door. I am standing with my hands stretched out. The eyes are thirsty. Make me have your darshan. Shower grace, O Lord. Take me across. O friend of the miserable ones, the ocean of compassion, how do you forget me? Showering grace, you liberated the saints, O Satguru. You have liberated even the sinners. You ate the contaminated fruits of Shivri, which of course is the story we have just heard, which, by the way, played also a very important part in Yellow Point activities this year, being dramatized. Don Mackin wrote a play on this story. Greg was Lord Rama. Barbara Gates was Shivri. Other people were in it also. And it was also the subject of a satsang, and I mentioned at the time, of the stories that the masters tell most often, references to it are everywhere in both Kripal and Sanchi's writings. You embraced all those who came into your refuge. You have erased everyone's difficulties. You have known everyone's pain. O Satguru, I am in your refuge. You are an ocean and I am your drop. You are my mother and father and brother. I am a beggar. You are the giver. O Ajab, this is the tale of lives. This is the story of birth after birth. O beloved Kripal Guru, my love with you is very ancient. Bhajan of Sanchi on page 267.
Tumase Meri Prita Purani He Kripala Guru Pyare Pyare Kripala Guru Tumase 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 Meri Prita Purani He Kripala Guru Pyare Kripal Guru Tumase Tadeva Jaye Padipada Huahum Atapasare Kahada Huahum Tadeva Jaye Padipada Huahum Atapasare Kahada Huahum Ankiya piyasi darsha dikau Deya karo prabhu para lagau Ankiya piyasi darsha dikau Deya karo prabhu para lagau Dina bandhu karuna ke sarkara Meri sura ke se bisarani He kirpala guru pyare Pyare he kirpala guru tumase Tumase meri prita purani He kirpala guru pyare Pyare He kirpala guru tumase Kirpa kari kata sana tare Sate guru tumane adama ubare Kirpa kari sata jana tare Sate guru tumane adama ubare Shri Kejute Palakai Sabasharana Gata Kahanta Lagai Shri Kejute Palakai Sabasharana Gata Kahanta Lagai Tumane sabaki sankate kahate sabaki pita jani he kirpala guru pyare pyare he kirpala guru tumase Tumase meri prita purani He kirpala guru pyare Pyare He kirpala guru tumase Satu guru me sharana tumari Tumasagara me bunda tumari Hey Satu guru me sharana tumari Tumasagara me bunda tumari Tumahi mata pita ora brata Mehu ja chaka tumaho data Tumahi mata pita ora brata Mehu Ajaya-bhye-hi-janamo-ki-gata. Ajaya-bhye-hi-janamo-ki-gata. Ye-hi-janama-janama-ki-kahani-he-kir-pala-guru-pyare. Tumase meri prita purani he kirpala guru pyare pyare.
Showering grace, you liberated the saints. Oh, Satguru, you have liberated even the sinners. You ate the contaminated fruits of Shivri. You embraced all those who came into your refuge. You have erased everyone's difficulties. You have known everyone's pain. Oh, Satguru, I am in your refuge. You are an ocean and I am your drop. You are my mother and father and brother. I am a beggar, you are the giver. O Ajaib, this is the tale of lives. This is the story of birth after birth. O beloved Kripal Guru, my love with you is very ancient. May God bless us all.